From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's show, we're going to talk about a major global health issue that's a rather indelicate subject. That's the practice of open defecation, or going to the bathroom outside without the bathroom. Now, this is a major cause of diarrheal diseases that kill about 2,200 children a day, more than die from HIV/AIDS, malaria, or tuberculosis combined. Now, as of 2015, an estimated 900 million people still defecated outside, according to the United Nations, and more than half of them, about a half billion people, were in India. So in response, the Indian government has launched what Bloomberg News calls, quote, the largest toilet building campaign in human history. According to government figures, this Clean India campaign has built more than 90 million new latrines and toilets in the past 4 years. Still, despite the toilet boom, public health experts say there's much to do to end the practice of open defecation, and the problem goes far beyond a shortage of latrines. So on this edition of Global Journalist, a look at the issue of open defecation in India and Prime Minister Narendra Modi's $20 billion campaign to end the problem. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a great panel of guests who have some different perspectives on this issue. But first, we're going to bring in Isha Ray. She's researched this issue extensively and is co-director of the Berkeley Water Center and an associate professor in the Energy and Resources Group at the University of California, Berkeley. Isha, welcome.
Delighted to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you. Explain to us how widespread open defecation affects water quality and disease transmission.
So open defecation is probably one of the most common forms of water contamination, soil contamination, and waterborne disease in the developing world. When you have open defecation and then in effect the waste, the poop, lies around in open drains or on the field or on the railway tracks, then the contaminants seep into the land, contaminating the land. If it is very close to a water body, which is quite common because that helps with the cleansing, then it goes directly into the water body, which then, of course, becomes other people's drinking and bathing and domestic use water. So the pathogens are right in the water. And when there are a large number of people who are following this practice, then the contaminants in the water bodies and in the open drains, etc., can of course get very concentrated, making them a complete hazard for example, children playing nearby or animals. And then think a little bit further. The direct contamination of the land and water we've already spoken about. But if it lies around for a while, just even a few short minutes, flies will essentially sit on the poop and then go wherever they go and land on fingers and food and surfaces. You know, flies are an extraordinarily efficient mode of spreading contamination. So through fingers, through food, through flies, through contamination of fluids, what we call the kind of the Fs, poop contamination can contaminate water surfaces, you know.
Well, I just wanted to pick up on this point because you've spent time in India in places where there weren't toilets or latrines as part of your research. I mean, maybe just describe your experience for us.
When I used to have to be in villages without any latrines whatsoever, the first time I encountered this was during my field work for my PhD. I was in Maharashtra, a village in a state in Western India, which is actually quite well off relative to the rest of to many other Indian states. So there were no toilets that were accessible to us at all. And so we had to go twice. We had to go like maybe just before 6 a.m. when it was still dark. And then we had to wait till about 8:30 p.m. at night, by which time darkness had fallen again. And the women would have to go in groups for security and for company. You know, there was no electric lights or anything at that time. So we would have to go in the dark in order to not be seen. And there was a particular place to which we could go. It was called the Ladies' Lane. And everyone in the village knew that that's where the women had to go to defecate or urinate in the morning and in the evening. And so everybody avoided that lane during the nighttime hours, because they knew that's when the women of the village are doing their business. And so this was my life for 9 months at one stretch.
So just to be clear, so if you need to go during the day, especially if you're a woman, you just hold it.
This is what I was going to, where I was going to go till you asked exactly the right question. If you imagine what those 12, 13, 15 hours are like, it's very hot. Everybody is working in the fields or working in the stores, or I'm going about my, you know, interviewing farmers and whatnot. It's very hot. You have to be very careful and pace your water drinking and tea drinking, even though you're thirsty, because you know that you cannot answer nature's call. You have to withhold food strategically so that you don't feel the urge to go before the dark comes.
Well, it strikes me then that this actually may cause health problems separate from just sort of the spread of diarrheal diseases, dysentery, through water contamination, through flies. It seems like there's also a lot of stress on individuals as well.
Yes, and this is in fact less covered in the literature and less considered, less noticeable as a public health problem relative to waterborne diseases like diarrhea, with which you opened your talk. You have dehydration, you have migraines that come from dehydration, you have anxiety and stress, you have constipation because you're not actually flushing your body the way you should, you have urinary tract infections, and this is this sort of litany of everyday diseases has become normalized for rural women who don't have access to latrines. It is just it becomes normalized for them.
I just wanted to ask about this issue of latrines, because the Indian government says that it has built 90 million latrines or toilets in the last 4 years. It's a huge figure. How much of a difference has it made? How sustainable will this be?
So that's a very good question. I do think that it's very important that the government has undertaken this enormous effort. And on balance, I think they should be commended for coming out there and saying, you know, toilets before temples, because one of the aspects of sanitation with which you opened, it's a very indelicate topic. Nobody wants to discuss like poop, right? And much less poop without latrines. So that's a good thing. And I think that building toilets for homes and communities is a good thing. Let me just complicate the issue with three short points. One, toilet building itself, especially if it is concentrated in people's homes and schools, which is where most of the money is going, while extremely important, does not actually address the extremely poor in rural or urban India who tend to be homeless, pavement dwellers, migrants, and other people who are in extremely tiny ramshackle type of homes, quote unquote homes, that cannot possibly contain a toilet and don't have the space even for an outhouse. So there, I would say that the very bottom of the economic pyramid will be much less likely to be helped.
And I'm sorry, Isha, our time grows short, but you said there were two other points that you wanted to make.
Thank you, yes. Thanks for reminding me. The second point I want to make is it's not clear that the toilets that are being built are actually being sustainably connected to either sewers or septic tanks or, you know, long drop pits, which means that at some point the toilets will overflow and the pits will fill up and the toilets will become unusable. That's a very important aspect. And the third aspect that we want to think about is the toilet to disposal entire sanitation service chain is not being served by building latrines alone. We have to think about who cleans the toilets, who transports the waste, how sustainably and safely that is done, and whether the waste is disposed of in a legal manner conducive to treatment or safe reuse.
Well, Isha, I think we're going to pick up on all these points a bit later in the show, but I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much.
This is
somehow.
Well, we appreciate it. A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the massive campaign by the Indian government to end the widespread practice of defecating outside. The Clean India program, or Swachh Bharat as it's known locally, has built 90 million toilets in 4 years. Now, to get some more perspective on this issue, we're going to bring in three other guests who have been following this. Joining us from just outside Mumbai, India, is Abhishek Kumar. He's a journalist who's written for publications including The Economist. He's also the co-founder of the IndyCast podcast network. Abhishek, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Delighted to be here.
Also with us from Singapore is Anupama Nalari. She's a research fellow at the Singapore University of Technology and Design. Anupama, welcome.
Thanks, Jason.
And on the line from Fort Collins, Colorado, is Yujung Lee. She's an assistant professor of political science at Colorado State, whose research interests include sanitation in India. Yujung, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Abhishek, if I could start with you. You live outside Mumbai, as I mentioned. How visible is this Swachh Bharat Clean India campaign to you?
Yeah, quite. Incidentally, there is a slum which is not too far away from where I live. So there are some 400 families that live in that village. About 2 years back, almost only about a tenth of them had toilets. So there are, it's a very commendable initiative from the Prime Minister of India in that he has for the first time stuck his neck out and said, as Isha said, that it is indeed a big problem. He's been coming out in movie theaters. The first 5 minutes that you see before a movie for a long time, until 2 years ago, you had Mr. Modi go out and talk about how important it is. Some 50% of the rural population in India, they defecate in the open by railway tracks or near river banks. But having said that, and I'll try to keep this brief, is that the other problem, despite having seen toilets around, is that very often people don't believe that it is a problem in the first place. I was at Jharkhand, which is not too far away in eastern India. It's not among the most rich states. There, people had internet, they had mobile phone connectivity, electricity, but did not have toilets because they felt there was no need for it, because river is right around the corner. Why need one? So the problem that the government is also up against is the mindset of some portion of the rural population who believe that you might spend that money elsewhere rather than building a toilet at home. This might not be shared by women, but yes, men who run the house.
Well, Yujung Lee, let's pick up on some of these challenges that Abhishek raised and that Isha raised earlier in the show. What other challenges are there? Abhishek was talking about sort of resistance, especially among men in certain areas, saying, well, why do we even need a toilet? What's wrong with what we've been doing? What are some of the other difficulties in changing behaviors?
Right. So I do first want to point out that I don't want to undermine the remarkable progress that has been made. The Clean India program that was launched in 2014 by Modi, the goal is to make India open defecation free. And the main method that's being used so far is that they are trying to provide access to toilets to everyone, whether you are in an urban area or whether you are in a rural area. And as you said, over 90 million toilets have been built so far, which is a very good thing. I think the bigger challenge, though, is that there are places where people do have access to toilets, but they're actually not being used. So some of my fieldwork for my research was done in a northern state called Uttar Pradesh. And in the rural areas, there were villages where they had these latrines built, and they were either used for storing grains, sometimes even they were storing animals in there, but they were not used for its intended purpose.
And So these latrines were built by the government or by a development agency, and people were, mm-hmm. instead of using them as latrines, they're storing their grain or they're keeping their animals inside them. Why did people say they weren't using the latrines?
Right. So there are various reasons. And I do think part of it is of what's needed is a collective behavioral change. People are very used to practicing open defecation. There is not as much shame around it, especially for men. And some would even say that it's part of the rural lifestyle. However, I think there needs to be a lot of the change also has to come from bottom up. So from top down, so far, if it has been about providing the materials to be able to construct latrines, I think from the bottom up, what is needed are these collective behavioral changes so that the practice of using a toilet rather than using other areas or other open areas, I think has to be made.
Well, I think we're going to touch some more on the government's efforts to change behaviors. I want to turn this to Anupama Nalari then, because you've done a lot of research on this in India, and something that Yu Zheng mentioned is that women in particular are more interested in having latrines than men oftentimes. What did you find about how a lack of toilets affects women and girls specifically?
Right, Jason. So I can talk from my experience from doing research in urban poor settlements in Bangalore and Mumbai. So I can tell you that the brunt of the burden, you know, from lack of sanitation facilities is borne by women. You know, whether it is in a slum that has toilets and where the pits, you know, the women and families just did not have the resources to maintain these toilets, so they're often abandoned because they cannot bear the cost of emptying pits. So what happens in this case is that women go out and find a spot, often, you know, exposing them to various risks, be it sexual harassment, abuse, snake bites, and such problems. So, but even when it comes to like redeveloped settlements, right, where you do have toilets within homes, then comes the issue of water shortages. And there again, you know, women are bearing the brunt of the burden in terms of lugging water up several flights of stairs, in terms of making toilets functioning. So it's not, you know, to touch upon what I think both Isha and the others have mentioned, it's not just a solution of a toilet being installed, but, you know, what are the other supportive infrastructures that are needed, especially when it, you know, we talk about gender and sanitation as a gendered space.
Yeah, Yujung Lee, if you could pick up on that, I know that one of the things that the research has shown is that it's particularly important that these latrines be built in schools, and that actually leads to an increase in school attendance among girls. Talk to us about that.
Right. So women are linked to the issue of sanitation more closely compared to men. And it's because women are disproportionately negatively affected by a lack of sanitation. As you said, it's known to affect enrollment and attendance of girls in schools. It's linked to maternal death. Women are also the primary caregivers to children. So, for example, if a child has to stay home because they have diarrhea and they fall sick, it's usually the woman who has to stay home. And what that means is that it takes away from the time that could be used for other economic or economically productive activities, whether it's doing housework or if it's doing another job. So, of course, with the practice of open defecation and having them do it usually after sunset, they are at higher risk to violence and sexual harassment as well. So for all of those reasons, sanitation really is, you know, there's a need to tailor sanitation communication messages and perhaps education and take consideration to this gender aspect as well.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about India's major effort to end the practice of defecating outside. Now, as recently as 2015, more than a half billion Indians still did it, and that's a major cause of illness and child mortality in the country. And Anupama Nalari, if I could turn this back to you, then you were touching on some of the difficulties of just building latrines and ensuring that they're used. Why might people in the countryside be resistant to having latrines in their homes? We heard Abhishek Kumar talking about how people in one part of the country that he talked to just weren't that interested in having them to begin with, didn't see the point.
Well, I think one of the issues is it, you know, being a cultural taboo. So in terms of, you know, toilets being unclean and unhygienic, and having them close to home is a sense, you know, having something that's unclean that is part of your home, which, you know, could also have other implications in terms of religion, as, you know, home being a place where you put gods and
okay, so in other words, then, if people are used to defecating far from their homes out in the fields, all of a sudden they have a latrine in their house, and that latrine, it can get smelly and dirty over time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I understand that there's also, I mean, there's also challenges with cleaning latrines, because obviously over time latrines fill up.
Right. You know, whether it's in the form of like common toilets within, especially in, you know, urban slums where the density is so high. So you have, you know, one toilet per 200 people. So that's, you know, that's pretty much insurmountable in terms of handling waste. So in terms of cleaning, I mean, when you put toilets down, it becomes, again, a question of who is cleaning these toilets and what are the health risks that are posed to people who are cleaning these toilets. So it is, you know, the chain that needs to be considered when we're talking about sustainable sanitation, not just dropping a toilet.
And Yu Jung Lee, I understand that one aspect of cleaning latrines is that there is an intersection between the caste system and this issue in some parts of the country, that there's actually a caste of Dalits or untouchables whose job or role in the community has traditionally to dispose of other people's human waste. Talk to us about some of the issues around that.
Right. So because of the notion of purity and pollution in the caste system, not only is it considered dirty, perhaps, to have a latrine in the household complex, but also the job in terms of who is going to clean the latrine, if the toilet needs manual cleaning, it's often left to the lowest of the caste system. So they're known as Dalits, untouchables, and scheduled caste. Now, what has happened is that, first of all, caste-based discrimination in India has been banned, and it's been banned for a long time. The problem is that the caste system still lives in the society today. The parliament has passed a series of bills that have been trying to prevent caste-based discrimination, one of which is prohibiting manual scavengers. Most of the work, once again, done by the Dalits.
So manual scavenging, so this is the practice of going around and using like a basket and a broom to sweep up other people's waste or to empty other people's latrines.
Right. Right. So these people are often using, you know, simple tools, bare hands, but no protection at all. In 2003, the Indian Parliament passed a bill that specifically prohibits manual scavengers. And the unique thing about this bill compared to the previous ones is that it also talks about how to get them to change into different types of employments. And there is a part of the bill that tries to subsidize and retrain them so that they have other forms of livelihoods and jobs that they could enter into.
Well, Abhishek Kumar, if I could turn this to you, because it does seem like much of the challenge here now going forward is going to be changing people's behavior. One aspect of this Swachh Bharat, the Clean India campaign, as I understand it, is the public shaming of people who are using the toilet outdoors. How does that work?
Yes, I think the strategy that the government has used to make sure that people have toilets is maybe you coerce them or embarrass them. You have what they call the good morning squads, where people patrol the fields and you know, threaten, or they've quashed the water cans that they carry, or one state had threatened to have drones to keep a watch on open fields. There was a time where a couple of old men were beaten up, or one of them was actually killed when he was trying to go up against a photographer who had clicked pictures of women that were defecating in the open. Someplace, I think the pensions or the government benefits were held back. So even I think there was Amitabh Bachchan.
So sorry, the government,
superstar.
It sounds like it's sending out people to sort of police the fields in the early morning. In some cases, even take pictures of people who are defecating outside. They've threatened to use drones. In some instances, they've threatened to withhold people's pensions or government benefits if they're seen doing this.
Yes, and while this is happening on one side, you also have some portion of the population who have once availed the subsidy for building toilets, and they may have frittered that money away in doing something else, but the data suggests that they have toilets, so the toilets don't come to them, but they have been, it's counted as if the toilets have indeed been installed in those places, and there is no measure of quality of these installations. So I was talking to a village head close by where I live, where he complained that the on-ground implementation can be patchy, in that the quality of cement used can be subpar. Often they skimp on basic materials. You have the local contractor and the engineer there who are, you know, in cahoots, and they can get away by not doing a great job. So all these nitty-gritties, while of course there is a website which counts, you know, it's a real-time information number of toilets that are built.
Right, the government has quite a nice website with an ever-increasing number, and you can watch the number of latrines being built tick upwards to about 90 million as of the taping of this program. But so, well, let me ask you, so it's quite clearly not simply an issue of just building more latrines. And it, I mean, it strikes me that this is sort of a low technology, you know, the technology itself is quite simple, building a latrine. Obviously, the government has undertaken these types of campaigns previously, Abhishek. Why have those not succeeded in the past? Why is this one any likelier to succeed?
Right, I think there is an immense pressure to speed up the whole thing and meet the deadline next year when it's Mahatma Gandhi's 150th birth anniversary. That's the deadline. So I think when any project which is done with the intention of getting just the numbers up without having a plan to even though it is a remarkable initiative, the reason being the people not using it, as I said before, some of it is a mindset, and just increasing the coverage or just getting more installations done might not solve the problem. There was a research done in 2014 which said that in 40% of the households with a working toilet, there was at least one family member who said, chuck it, I'll just go out and relieve myself.
So sorry, 40% of the households that had a toilet, at least one person in that household didn't use it.
Yes, that's right. That was 2014. In 4 years' time, I'm not sure if the mindsets can change, even though you have a toilet. And another problem, of course, is that 600 million Indians do not have access to ready water. So there is a general problem as well. Just by having a toilet at home doesn't mean that you would use it, because there is no water to make sure that the sewage system and the like work. That's where you go out and relieve yourself, especially in rural India.
Well, Abhishek Kumar, I'm sorry, we're out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute of the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Isha Ray, Abhishek Kumar, Anupama Nalari, and Yujung Lee for joining us. Our assistant producers this week are Madison Conti, Chris Cronin, and Jaye Shi. Maggie Duncan is visual editor. We bid farewell to our supervising producer, Yanqi Shu, who's moving to Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Aaron Hay. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. We'll leave you with a cut from a song about this issue by a Bollywood actor, Akshay Kumar. It's called Toilet Kajugad, which roughly translates as the toilet solution. Ab to